Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're looking at a vulnerability that, well, it really should have been solved months ago.
And yet it's still out there, a very active threat.
It's a huge one. It's basically serving as an open door for some pretty sophisticated hackers.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission today is really to pull apart the key facts on this ongoing exploitation of the Array Network's AG series VPNs.
Right. And it's not just a technical flaw.
No, we're going to look at the whole attack, the tools they're using, and this really surprising hurdle that's just made fixing it a complete nightmare for security teams everywhere. Okay, so the core issue here, it's a critical command injection flaw.
And we have to be clear, this isn't some theoretical, you know, lab experiment.
Not at all. No. This is being actively used by cyber criminals
mm-hmm.
and has been since, what, August 2025?
At least since August, yeah.
So that means even after the fix was out, there was this three-month window where organizations were just exposed.
And a lot of them missed it. For a big company with thousands of devices, that's just a catastrophe waiting to happen.
It really is.
Yeah.
So maybe you can set the stage for us. What role do these Array Network's devices actually play?
Well, you have to understand, the AG series, this is critical SSL VPN technology.
So it's front door.
Literally the front door for your entire remote workforce. Their job is to create these encrypted, trusted tunnels into your corporate network. You are giving them an incredible amount of privilege.
I see.
Look, if a standard web server gets hit, it's a problem, but it's often a localized breach.
Right.
But if the device that authenticates your employees and manages access to your internal network gets compromised, which is what's happening here, well, the attacker doesn't need to break in anymore.
They just walk in.
They walk in. And they look like legitimate traffic. They're inside the perimeter. And that's why this is one of the most severe risks an enterprise can face right now.
Okay, let's unpack the specifics here. So we're dealing with a critical command injection flaw.
Mm-hmm.
And it affects ArrayOS AG version 9.4.5.8 and, well, everything before that.
That's right. And it hits both the hardware and the virtual appliances. No distinction.
Now, sometimes in security, you get a bit lucky. A flaw needs a very specific, maybe rare configuration to be exploited. What's the trigger here?
There is a narrow targeting requirement. The appliance has to have the Desktop Direct remote access feature enabled.
Desktop Direct, okay.
If that feature is disabled, this specific attack vector won't work.
So that's something. But I imagine a lot of organizations use that feature.
They do. It's there for seamless remote access, so it definitely doesn't diminish the urgency.
And the timeline here, it really tells a story, doesn't it?
It does. Array Networks released the patched version 9.4.5.9 back in May 2025.
May. And exploitation started in August.
Exactly. That small window tells you everything. It suggests the threat actors got the patch. They immediately started to, you know, reverse engineer it to find the flaw.
And then weaponized it. Fast.
Incredibly fast. This
yeah.
is just standard operating procedure for them now when it comes to mission-critical infrastructure.
And we know this is a live targeted campaign, not just random scanning, and that's thanks to an urgent advisory from JP Cert.
Japan's Computer Emergency Response Team, yeah, they've been on top of this.
And they didn't just put out a warning, they gave us some hard data.
They did. JP Cert identified a specific malicious IP address that's being used. It's 194.233.10.138.
And what's it used for?
Both for the initial exploit attempts and for the command and control communications that come after.
So having that specific IP is huge for detection.
It's crucial. And it confirms, like you said, this isn't just a scanner looking for open ports. This is a focused attack campaign trying to get in and stay in.
And that idea of staying in, mm-hmm. persistence, that brings us to the attack tool. This is where it gets really interesting for me.
The web shell.
The web shell. So the goal isn't just to keep using the command injection flaw over and over.
No, that's too noisy.
Right.
Yeah.
So for anyone listening who follows this stuff but maybe isn't in the trenches every day, what exactly is a web shell? And why is it so much better for an attacker?
So a web shell is basically a backdoor. It's a malicious script, usually written in something common like PHP, that gets uploaded onto the compromised web server. In this case, the VPN appliance itself.
Okay.
And the reason it's so powerful is, well, it's twofold.
One.
First, once it's uploaded, the VPN device itself just sees it as normal web traffic. It's a script that's supposed to be there. So it completely bypasses any monitoring that's looking for those repeated injection attempts.
It provides stealth.
Exactly. And yeah. Second, it gives them persistent remote control. They don't need the original vulnerability anymore. They just browse to the web shell's URL.
And from there, they could do what?
anything. Execute operating system commands, access files, change configurations. It's long-term high privilege access that just blends in with legitimate traffic. It gives them stealth and longevity.
So the command injection flaw, it's just the delivery mechanism. It's like throwing a master key over the wall.
That's a perfect analogy.
And JPC Cert detailed what the attackers are doing with that key.
Yeah.
They're placing these PHP web shell files into a very specific directory.
Yes, the target is CopProxy web app. That's the critical location.
And why there?
By putting it in that path, they're ensuring the web application part of the VPN can actually execute the script.
And once that happens?
The consequences are immediate. They can start pulling out sensitive network data. And maybe the most dangerous part, they can create new unauthorized administrator accounts.
Ah, so even if you find and delete the web shell,
they've already built themselves another way in. It's all about creating multiple avenues of entry.
Okay, now let's get to the part that has turned this from just a critical incident into a, frankly, a systemic failure for cybersecurity teams globally.
The CVE, or lack thereof.
Exactly. We've established how severe this is. There's an active threat. There's a permanent fix. And yet, Array Networks has not assigned a CVE identifier to this flaw.
Which is baffling.
I mean, I get that vendors can lag sometimes. But when you have a national cert issuing an advisory on an active threat, what are the real-world implications of not assigning that CVE? It feels like a huge point of friction.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it's a massive deal. The missing CVE fundamentally breaks the industry's entire automated vulnerability management workflow.
Can you break it down?
Sure. Security teams everywhere rely on CVE numbers. They're like unique fingerprints for vulnerabilities. Those numbers feed all their automated tools, their scanners, their management systems.
Right.
So imagine a big company, they run a scan, the tools are programmed to look for CVEs and flag anything critical. But since this vulnerability doesn't have a number, it's effectively invisible to those systems. The platform just can't connect the public exploit information to an action that needs to be taken on one of their assets.
So instead of an automated high priority ticket being created.
Right, a P1 urgent ticket.
It needs a human analyst to manually read the JP Cert advisory, figure out what it means, then write a manual search to find the vulnerable devices, and then track it all by hand.
Exactly. And that costs time, it costs labor, and it dramatically increases the risk that something gets missed.
It's not just about tracking, is it? This has to affect compliance, too.
It does. A lot of compliance frameworks, you know, in finance or healthcare, they mandate patching timelines based on CVSS scores, which are tied directly to CVEs.
So no CVE, no score, no mandated timeline.
And no red flag in your compliance dashboard. The vendor is basically allowing their customers to fail standard checks without their systems ever alerting them. It's a real drag on global remediation.
And this isn't the first time for this platform, is it?
It's not. We have to remember, this follows the targeting we saw in 2024 of CVE 2023-284-621. That was another really bad remote code execution flaw on the same devices.
So cyber criminals have this infrastructure in their sights.
They clearly view Array Networks VPNs as a high value and perhaps persistently soft target. They know it gets them that strategic internal access.
Okay, let's talk about the scale of this. How many devices are we even talking about? I know the researcher Yutaka Sejiyama from Macnica did some work on this.
He did, and it's crucial work. He basically scanned the internet to get a scope of the exposure.
And what did the data show?
The research found about 1,831 potentially vulnerable devices that are publicly accessible.
Wow. For specialized gear like this, that's a pretty big attack surface.
It is. And they're not spread out evenly, which is interesting. The highest concentrations are in China, Japan, and the United States.
And what about the immediate risk? How many of those had that key feature, Desktop Direct, turned on?
At the time of the scan, at least 11 verified hosts had it enabled, so they were immediately and actively vulnerable.
11 might not sound like a huge number, but...
But for an attacker, compromising even one of those organizations is a massive win. That's all they need.
And the geographic concentration, you mentioned Asia. What does that mean?
Well, with so many vulnerable devices in Japan and China, it creates a bit of a regional challenge. The SERPs there are on it, but Western security organizations, they might not be prioritizing this specific vendor as much.
So it creates that blind spot we were talking about.
A very dangerous blind spot in global threat intelligence and prioritization.
So let's just reiterate the nightmare scenario. Attacker gets in, plants the web shell. What happens next? What's the practical impact for that company?
It's game over. It's the equivalent of them having the keys to the kingdom.
Well,
a successful VPN compromise immediately allows for high-speed lateral movement. The attacker can just jump from the VPN appliance right into the trusted internal network.
And from there?
From there, they escalate their privileges, they harvest credentials, they find sensitive data, or, and this is the big one, they deploy ransomware or some other destructive malware across the entire enterprise.
So you're turning your most trusted gateway into their primary launch pad.
Precisely. The one thing you bought to keep them out is now the thing letting them run wild inside.
Given that, the action plan has to be urgent. Let's walk through the immediate steps organizations need to take, the official fix first.
The first, the primary, the non-negotiable step is to deploy Areo AMI version 9.4.5.9 immediately.
FO delays.
This patch permanently closes the command injection vector. This is a fix that honestly should have been deployed months ago. There should be zero tolerance for any more delay on this.
But we know that patching critical infrastructure isn't always instant. You might have a change freeze or need a maintenance window.
Right.
GPCert provided a couple of workarounds for that situation, some stopgap measures. What are they?
The first one is the simplest. It's configuration hardening. Mm-hmm. If you don't absolutely need the desktop direct feature for business operations, turn it off. Disable all of its services.
If you don't use it, lose it.
Exactly. It's a very practical way to reduce your risk surface, but you have to accept it might break access for some of your users temporarily.
Okay. And the second workaround?
The second one is more technical. It targets the attack method. You can implement URL filtering rules to block any URL that contains a semicolon character.
Why a semicolon?
Because the semicolon is often used in command injection to chain multiple commands together on one line. Blocking it can disrupt the exploit.
Any downside?
You just have to monitor it for false positives. Some legitimate web apps might use semicolons in weird, complex URLs, so you have to be careful not to break something else. But it's a good tactical defense.
Okay, so beyond patching and workarounds, security teams need to hunt. They need to figure out if they've already been compromised. What are the key indicators of compromise, the IOCs, they should be looking for right now?
They need to audit the file system and logs. First, look for persistence. Examine that kproxy web app directory. Look for any PHP files or scripts that shouldn't be there. That's the confirmed drop zone for the web shells.
Okay, check that directory. What's next?
Second, check your admin accounts. Scrutinize the logs for any new administrator accounts that were created recently, especially ones nobody can account for. The web shell is often used to create these backdoors.
Makes sense. And the last thing.
Network traffic. You have to analyze your logs for any connections going out to that known malicious IP, the 194.233.170.138 address.
And if you see traffic going there?
If you see that, you have to assume you are compromised. It's time to start your incident response plan.
This has been a really fascinating, and I have to say, troubling deep dive.
That's a bad one.
Yeah. We've covered a critical, actively exploited flaw in some really high-value VPN gear. We detailed the power of the web shell for stealth and persistence.
And that huge systemic hurdle.
That frustrating hurdle caused by the vendor just failing to assign a CVE.
I think the broader lesson here is that we can't afford to treat VPNs like some kind of black box that just sits there and handles encryption.
It's a server.
It's a highly privileged server, and it's exposed directly to the internet. It needs the exact same rigorous security hygiene as your most sensitive database.
So immediate updates, hardening the configuration.
All of it. Continuous monitoring for file changes, for lateral movement. Hmm. Because you have to know, the attackers are betting that you're going to overlook these gateway devices. They're counting on it.
Indeed. And we spent a lot of time on the missing CVE, that lack of a public identifier. So I want you to think about the real downstream costs of a decision like that. It's not just technical. Think about the lost time, the increased risk, the sheer number of hours that security teams all over the world had to spend manually chasing this thing, all because one vendor chose not to request formal documentation. So the critical question to mull over is this: what is the true responsibility of a vendor to standardize their disclosures to protect the entire industry? To make sure that threat intelligence and patching aren't dependent on someone having to do it all by hand. That's what you need to be thinking about as you look at your own security posture.